the Federal Reserve Soothsayer.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. I'll bet Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke gets asked this question a lot. When's the financial fallout going to let up? He's probably heard it at the diner while having breakfast, maybe at the health club between Stairmaster and elliptical trainer. And he was asked last night on CBS's 60 Minutes. The answer? Later this year, early next. And that's contingent on a lot of things.
It depends a lot on the financial system. The lesson of history is that you do not get a sustained economic recovery as long as the financial system is in crisis. And we've seen some progress in financial markets, absolutely. But until we get that stabilized and working normally, we're not going to see recovery.
In the interview, Bernanke said of all the things the Fed has done to help stabilize the economy, the one thing that's given him, in his words, the most angst was the bailout of American International Group. He said the company gambled with questionable bets and put the entire financial system at risk. Then there's the news that AIG paid tens of millions of dollars in bonuses to company executives with that bailout money, and that's infuriated others. Among them, Congressman Barney Frank, chairman of the House Financial Services Committee.
These people may have a right to their bonuses. They don't have a right to their jobs forever. The federal government now is the 80% owner. One of the things we can do to make sure this doesn't happen again, we've got people who are so irresponsible. And by the way, it does appear to me we're rewarding incompetence. Forget about the legal matter here for a second. These bonuses are going to people who screwed this thing up enormously.
Congressman Frank on the Today Show. Now, all this emotion could have a negative implication on the Obama administration's plans to get things moving. From North Carolina Public Radio, here's Marketplace's Janet Babin.
Even Obama administration officials registered outrage over bonuses and other moves at AIG. The company received $170 billion in federal rescue money. Duke University professor James Cox fears problems the president inherited are now being seen as problems he created.
I think it's inevitable that the Obama administration gets tainted. The question is just how much it gets tainted.
Cox says the president can limit the damage by continuing to be a clear spokesman of what the problems are and how he's fixing them. If the administration can't quell the naysayers, it could lead to bigger economic problems down the road. Len Blum's managing director at Westwood Capital.
If the public outcry is severe enough, it's going to make it difficult for Obama to get subsequent bailouts passed.
And Blum thinks there's a very good chance we'll need another bailout before the crisis ends. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Financial stocks are fueling some gains on Wall Street as we start the business week. Dow is up about, nearly a percent, 63 points at this hour. The NASDAQ up about a quarter of a percent. The S&P 500 shares up about a percent on average. Asian markets closed up today. Japan's Nikkei rose about a percent and a half. The Hang Seng gained about 3.5%. Markets across Europe are higher across the board, anywhere from 1 to 2%. The government says the nation's industrial output fell for the fourth month in a row, 1.4% last month. It's now at its lowest level in more than half a century. U.S. factories are being battered not only by falling demand here at home, but also in key overseas markets. Listening to the Morning Report on Monday, March 16, 2009, at Marketplace.org. U.S. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner was at a World Finance Ministers gathering near London over the weekend. It was a starter meeting of sorts to the G20 financial summit set for the U.K. next month. While there wasn't much expected, officials did agree to work together on addressing some core financial problems. From London, Christopher Worth explains.
Finance ministers agreed that removing toxic assets from banks' balance sheets is a key priority. Otherwise, fiscal measures to stimulate economies of the world could fall flat. There have been previous attempts to deal with toxic assets, such as the initial plan for the Toxic Asset Relief Program, but they were never implemented. David Buick of BGC Partners says a unified international approach from the G20 is ideal.
I think if it were done on a global basis, I think the effect of being able to net off toxic assets between banks would be very complementary. But I've got a funny feeling it may end up being, we have to do this, but each country has to do it according to what its requirements are.
Those requirements should become more clear this week. U.S. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner is expected to reveal a more detailed outline of his proposal for using public-private partnerships for dealing with those bad assets. In London, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
In Kansas today, senators debate a bill that would eliminate the death penalty. But it's not the only state reconsidering the cost of putting defendants on death row. Just a few days ago, the New Mexico legislature voted to repeal executions in favor of a life sentence without parole. Colorado and New Hampshire are also considering abolishing their death penalties, in part due to the expense. The economy may be changing how state governments measure justice, as Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
Last year, an Urban Institute study found that each death penalty case cost the state of Maryland $2 million more due to extra hearings and appeals, juries and lawyers. The study's author, John Roman, says death row security is also expensive.
The daily cost of having them on death row is about three times what it is for a normal prisoner. And then they spend years on death row as the case goes through the appellate process, and there's all sorts of additional costs there.
Supporters of abolishing the Kansas death penalty say it would save $400,000 a case. But the state's attorney general questions those savings. Ashley Anstead is the attorney general's communications director.
Whether you're going for a life sentence or a death sentence, there are still going to be significant appeals. And our attorneys get paid the same regardless of which case we go for, whether it's a death sentence or a life in prison sentence.
Besides, Anstatt says, cost should not decide matters of just punishment. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
HBO debuts a new film today that's got the pork industry up in arms. The documentary, which will air many times, shows abusive practices at one pork farm. How could the film affect the other white meat? Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith takes a look.
Clearly, Your Honor, it is torturing an animal.
Was that animal suffering?
No, sir. I don't think it was. That's
typical. Death on a Factory Farm chronicles some grisly practices at an Ohio pork producer. Bradley Miller is the director of the Humane Farming Association, which gathered some of the key footage. He hopes the film will have a commercial impact. He says after his association's campaign against veal in the 80s, sales plummeted.
So we're hopeful that we can have a similar effect within the pork industry, that this will prompt them to clean up their act in response to consumer pressure.
The practices of the Ohio hog farm are not typical, says Paul Sundberg with the National Pork Board. And he says if consumers start to vote with their wallets, the industry will listen.
There certainly is that incentive when the marketplace says, this is what we want to do. When producers hear that, they can respond.
Pork sales are holding up in the lean economy. Other more expensive meats have seen sales decline. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Party season is underway for cable television channels. Upfront season has begun. And if you work in the industry, your calendar is booked from now until May. Upfront events are a chance for stations to show previews of their latest programming. They invite advertisers, trot out their stars and some cheese plates, and hopefully companies buy some ad time. But can TV channels still sell enough advertising time during a recession? Amanda Aronchik has this report.
The Super Bowl is giving TV companies hope. NBC says it made more from advertising during the big game than ever before. But Mike Reynolds of Multichannel News says NBC had to scrounge for revenue.
Those last few commercial spots were not sold to the day of the game. So that's a little different than the way things have been.
Ad sales have been tepid across the industry, says Mark Gull. He's the VP for ad sales for BBC America, but he's not worried.
We're not changing our plan of attack at all.
Gull's confident that BBC America can win advertisers, even in a recession. Aaron Cohen of Horizon Media buys ad space for companies. He says most TV companies have no idea how much advertisers will be willing to spend.
We're in a period where there are a goodly number of advertisers who really are in a perplexed state as to what they can do with their total advertising budgets for the coming year.
Cohen says advertisers won't buy as much ad space in one go as they have in the past. So it could be a long time before TV channels know how much money they'll make. I'm Amanda Aronchik for Marketplace.
You could say say the beginning of the end of Wall Street as we knew it began a year ago today. On this date last year, J.P. Morgan Chase bought Bear Stearns for a bargain. Today, none of the former top five investment banks is quite what it was. And as Marketplace's Amy Scott reports, smaller firms are seizing the opportunity.
You've probably never heard of Pally Capital. Neither had Averill Rye until last summer. But when his job at Bear Stearns disappeared, the boutique investment bank suddenly looked appealing. Pally is one of many small firms moving into the space vacated by big investment banks and loading up on their talent.
It's a huge growth opportunity for smaller firms. And in fact, if you look at the past year, I think our firm has probably grown by 30% or so.
Rye is now head of investment banking at Pally. He says resumes are pouring in from people at high-profile banks like Morgan Stanley.
Which I think a year and a half or 2 years ago would not have been possible, because those guys, A, would not have been willing to leave, and two, not go to a smaller platform that they probably hadn't heard of.
After all the upheaval on Wall Street, Jefferies and Company says it's now the largest independent U.S. investment bank. Dan Marchetti joined recently from Merrill Lynch to build the company's bond business. Jefferies hasn't escaped unscathed. It's had to lay people off, too. But Marchetti says the firm is growing in areas like government bonds and the old-fashioned advice business.
The growth right now will come from just going back to the basics of what the industry really was bringing buyers and sellers together, providing advice to clients, and kind of the basic stuff that, you know, got lost somewhere in the last 2 or 3 years.
So will the Jefferies and Pally Capitals of the world grow up to be the next Wall Street behemoths? Michael Henry is a consultant to the financial services industry with Accenture. He doesn't think so.
As these companies grow, they're going to hit some of the same limitations as the larger banks have. They're not going to be able to get as much leverage on capital.
It was that leverage, essentially borrowed money, that got big banks into so much trouble. The folks at Jefferies say they hope to grow without making the same mistakes. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
We've been talking a lot about bailout criticism. There's been a lot of complaints lately about banks taking government help and then doing what they've always done, corporate junkets, sponsoring athletic events, acting all corporate-y. All those complaints are something our friend, Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan, has taken notice of.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
All right, Alan, so it's not politically kosher for companies to use bailout money for anything frivolous. We got that part. So what's at the heart of all these complaints?
People are angry, and I could see why people are angry. You know, they're losing their jobs. They're seeing people, including maybe themselves, getting their houses foreclosed on. And you hear a story about, you know, some evil company that has taken government bailout money and is off in some fancy place having a sales meeting, and it makes people angry. And I understand that.
So what does the government then do to stop people from getting angry?
Well, I mean, the long run is you've got to fix the economy, but that's not going to happen, God knows, anytime soon. What would be helpful is if the government actually decided to treat the people in this country like grown-ups instead of like children who need to be indulged and fed something. Now, I know a lot of the people in the executive branch of the government are in fact grown-ups and they know how the world works. But in this environment, I don't think any of them dare, which is their failing, to get up and say, look, we know you find this offensive, but if we're ever going to get our money back and these companies are ever going to function, there are certain things they do. And one of the things they do is have sales meetings.
So how then does this affect the entire economy?
Well, it affects the economy indirectly, because if you assume that the companies we're talking about are important, which is why they're getting bailout money, right? And if you get in their way and make them less profitable, you're hurting in the end the chance for these companies to lend more money or to expand or and to earn enough to pay back the money that they borrowed. And let me hasten to say that I am not some shill for corporate America. I'm the guy who's always finding problems and writing about tax dodges and things like that because that's what I do. But even to me, this turning every private plane trip into some sort of asocial act, you don't really accomplish anything except to vent and make people less forthcoming with the government and less inclined to be involved in anything that involves business trusting the government. And that's not a good thing.
Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan. Alan, thank you.
You're welcome, Steve.
Hey, you can share your thoughts with us at marketplace.org in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great Monday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.